Again, thank you. Thank you very much. And okay, I was supposed to do this talk on the platform. I will try to do my best, but I also will show some plots because this the main topic of the talk. I mean, the title is Origin of the Ice Cube Events, but the idea is I will try to explain a little bit what they measure, and then a little bit what's the possible origin of these neutrinos, where they come from, right? A priori, you see high energy neutrinos coming from the sky, and you look there and you try to see if there's something like GRB, some source. Or maybe not, maybe there's something else, some new physics going on. And I will try to explain a little bit the general picture of all this stuff. And okay, here, all you know very well, this is the ice cube detector, and basically you put a lot of photomultipliers in the ice. And it's a very big one, it's 1 km³, and it has 86 extremes, and about 5,100 photomultipliers. In the top of ice cube, there's the ice top, which is this thing here in the top. And then there's this, I mean, the colors they design different periods of ice. The main idea behind this thing, and it turns light also, is go and measure this part here, right? This line, the black line, is the atmospheric neutrinos. And this red line is what comes from CHARM in the atmosphere. And this blue line is the cosmogenic neutrinos. Those are produced when the cosmic rays they interact with the CMB or something. And that produces, then the other astrophysical objects, something that we can estimate from the astrophysical objects, is a flat that looks pretty much like this here. Then if you want to look here in this region, you need a big detector to measure these neutrinos, and that's what ice cube people did, right? Then if you look, something I want to show you first. I mean, if you look at, I didn't put the plot there, but if you look at the effective area of ice cube, it looks something that's basically grows than this, except for the electron neutrinos that has also the...
What are you drawing?
This is the effective area.
So this is defined, but you multiply by flux, it assumes absorption and assumes the cross section. You multiply it by flux, and you get a rate.
You get the number of events. If you multiply this for the neutrino flux, you get the number of events. And something the only important thing I want to emphasize is that this is the
number. What is on that other axis?
Energy.
Okay.
Here is the energy. Right? And, for example, here is about 10 to the 2 TeV. Right, and here more or less there's and that's basically the ideas that go up. This is very important. I mean, the detector is not losing sensitivity at high energies, and everything you will see in the vents, it will. This is integrated completely. Yeah, there's the absorption of the earth. That's exactly true. Yeah, okay.
Now, so the resonance is what?
Sorry?
The resonance is what?
This is the glacial resonance. It's when you produce W's. I mean, the detector W's. For electron neutrinos becomes very efficient with these energies.
W's. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, this is why there are two lines here. I mean, the others go here. And there's a little bit of difference here in the flavors, but it's not really.
For electron energy.
Huh? Yeah.
Energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, then what they have is that, I mean, they use the detector, like this is ice cube, right? And what they do, they say, okay, we want to measure neutrinos, and let's try to avoid any particle that enters into the detector. This is where they put some kind of pitot, right? They call it pitot, they put a region here. And they look only events that doesn't give any light in that region, and also in that region. Why that region is because there's a dust layer in that region, and they don't want to mess up things. I mean, they basically, this region is, you may have not signal, and it's pretty dirty region. Basically, the light gets very absorbed in the ice because something happens in the history of all this ice going on in the Antarctic, and there's dust here. And then they look for this kind of events, starting here, right? And what happens is that in 3 years, what happens is that in 3 years, about 988 days, which is the effective number of days that ice cube was measuring correctly, they found, and this is the last result, the last public result of 37 events, inside here. There are 8 tracks, and I don't know what this track tracks, and 28 cascades. Okay, the tracks basically are muon neutrinos, right? A muon neutrino goes here, it produces a muon, it produces some cascade, and from muon, and then it produces a track of light. I think somewhere I took a picture of the track and cascade. How do you look? Yeah, this is a typical track, and this is a typical cascade. And cascade is when you produce electrons, you produce like a bubble of light, because they get very absorbed. That's
going to sound very horrible. Okay.
That's what they measure. Then the good thing about the tracks is that you have a very good angular resolution. You have about 1 degree angular resolution. With cascades, you have something between 10 and 30 degrees. I mean, depending on where the cascade is and how you can reconstruct this direction. For cascades, the direction is very difficult. For the track, it's very good, which makes tracks very good to analyze pointing things. And that's the SUM 37, right? And there's one that they call coincidence, and they will do the analysis. And what that means is that basically in iStop there was some hits in iStop at that point, and they say, okay, be careful with that event because maybe it's part of the background range. And okay, that's what it is, right? Then let me show you examples. How they are distributed in energy, right? This is the energy spectrum. This blue and these things here. Okay. These things are the background. This is including some statistical and systematic errors. This is putting as the maximum value you can put atmospheric neutrinos coming from CHARM. And this green line is the best fit. They fit a polar spectra. The question, some interesting things that some people was looking is like, for example, there's like a gap here. And another thing that is maybe more obvious is that there's a cutoff. They don't see any other event at high energies. Then at some point, there's a cutoff. You can put here a Bohr law, which is about 2.3. You don't need the cutoff. And if you put 0.2, you need to put a cutoff to explain, to fit the data. But statistically, this thing is not really statistically significant, the gap, right? Then the question is, okay, we know we have these events with high energies. We know there are some events that have background, especially at low energy. But basically, the next question is where they come from, right? And many people were studying possible astrophysical, what's the nature of these guys, right? So many people were studying the astrophysical origin of these neutrinos, and there are many candidates. There are GNVs, AGNs, Star Wars galaxies, even the cosmogenic neutrinos interacting with some media. I mean, you have to do it a bit tricky. But there are many candidates to explain high energy neutrinos. The problem, or one of the problems that I think is important, and many people will think about, is that when you look where these neutrinos come from, you don't see GRVs, for example. Oh, the GRVs are objects that they produce flashes of light, right? They produce flashes in seconds or very concrete time. If you look for correlations between timing and GRVs for these events, there's not any of these events happening at the same time as GRV, right? And then, that's important. When you look, for example, for catalogs of, I'm talking things that I check at some point we were checking, because we were saying, okay, what's the origin of that? What's the reason, right? And then you take, for example, a catalog, some catalogs of Star Wars galaxies or AGN, and you do some statistical tests that I can tell you later how to do that better. But the idea is you don't find any correlations. It doesn't mean the catalogs are complete, it doesn't mean anything. It's a bit complicated question. But at a first order, you don't know where you come from. And this is what opens a little bit the window for new physics. And something.
Sorry, a question.
Yeah.
Important uncertainties in the background coming from CHARM. The level is not well
yeah.
known. So, how do you estimate these errors coming from that?
On the
CHARM, the level of CHARM.
I don't remember. I don't know exactly how they do that. I think what they do is they put different models. right?
So it's just a dispersion of the models, but
I think
there's
so.
No real...
Yeah.
No, I think they use data. They use data, previous data at lower energies.
Yeah, but you could extrapolate
that. Yeah, but like, how do you know? But at lower energies, there is no, the charm is not...
Well, no, problem. Not a low, just slightly lower energy.
We're going to have LC Reno coming in a couple of weeks from now, and I think we can make a talk about that because they're working on this.
Yeah, they are doing a new analysis.
Well, I know that,
but in any case, the level of charms in this data is not more than a couple of events of monthly. It's like they're not linear.
Yeah, but limit.
A couple of events.
Yeah, yeah. It's not one of the.
It cannot be. So it doesn't have. So it introduces only a error.
A small error. The charm is not the main problem. Mm.
Do you have a plot with the two-way neon events?
What?
And the higher than 30 two-way neon events.
Two-way neon events higher than... What do you mean? I don't know.
What's the new data?
Yeah.
Well, it's old data, but they analyzed for a paper.
Yeah, that's one, the 28 and the 32, even the ones that they think...
There's another.
Okay, you're talking about the diffuse flux with muons, outgoing muons.
Yes.
Yeah, the direction is wrong.
I'm not in the direction, but it's
the energy.
Yeah.
I think that's already public, huh?
Right, so do you know a plot of that?
I don't know, I don't have it here.
Because does it fill up a gap problem?
Yeah, there's no gap in the plot.
But how significant is this gap?
I mean, this gap is not significant at all. If you produce this randomly, it happens once every five times that you have a gap like this.
Because it's one event, 0.8 events, 0.2 events. It's all small numbers.
Yeah, I mean this is the lowest scale thing. I mean, you have if you produce this, I mean the significance of this is zero. They never talk about
how that. Many events would they have?
In the neons.
Yeah.
No. I don't remember the plot of the neons. I mean, I remember the tail and some there, but also, I mean, this is a bit dangerous because the energy, this is the reconstructed energy or something related with that, and the real energy of the material can be very much moving also. And yeah, especially for the neons.
What's going into the airways for the event breaker?
For the error bars,
you have 1 plus or minus 0.2.
I think it's a statistical error, just.
Mm-hmm. You have 1 event per the whole 988 days, so you have 1 event total.
Yeah.
How can the error be anything but?
I mean, you have 1 event, but the question is how you plot this in number of events per year, right? And then you plot 1 sigma fluctuation, or some fluctuations of the number of events, I guess. I mean, I didn't plot that.
I think what's more significant in this plot, which is not shown here, because it's the cutoff. Because it's cutoff at like 2 PeV, but if you would extend it, we have many of the error bars, like the last one, that adds up to statistics.
Yeah, that's very important. I mean, this is where this plays a role. I mean, the detector is good at high energies, then this plot should continue producing this.
But does this mean that they don't have events, or just that they don't publish those events? Or they don't publish that?
No, they have events there. I mean, this analysis is the only cut in energy, in the energy of the precipitated something. In this analysis, are low energies.
No, fine, but my question is, do they have info about that and they don't give it, or they don't?
They have something.
Yes, they have sensitivity. But my question is, there is no event at a higher energy, or just they don't say anything?
There is no event at higher
energy. So okay.
You mean they have a huge event and they don't
have
a
huge event?
They will
go
about 10 PeV or so. My question is,
there
is zero. They say that there is zero event at 10 PeV, or they don't say anything.
This question, I mean, I think I may have missed the point. There are no ice cube events at higher energy?
Yeah, there are not.
Okay.
That's important. That's important. They don't cut the plot here. They cut it here, but it keeps going with you.
they haven't observed any events at higher energy. That doesn't mean there are no.
There are no events in ice cube.
Also, this analysis.
We don't know what's
the analysis of it. Is that it's like contained events in some way. So you're going to restrict your event sample somewhat. I mean
the cats that they use in analysis, they may remove things like you are saying, like for example a huge cascade here, right? Something like that. They don't play with
the games,
that gets completely excluded.
Yeah, but you have a new just got an event in the detector with 10 dB, it's insane.
I agree. I mean, if this cascade is centered here, they should see all the detector flashing, and they don't see that.
So it should be for this.
They don't tell it to me. I mean,
okay.
It should be included in the detective area.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
For this analysis,
yeah.
I think one of
these
tiny half.
Yeah.
Something like that. So that's included in the cuts.
No, no, really, yeah, all the caps are in the effective area. That's really important. This doesn't go down here. I mean, it's measuring in that region. The question is, will they cap? Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, then some speculations some possible explanations we were trying to understand. One was like going catalogs and trying to find correlations, and that was a bit complicated. And there's nothing obvious or clear, you know, like, okay, on here is one time constant. You have three events and they have time constants. It's not like that. You have zero, and that's something that anyone can check easily. Then the next thing, and this is what the fact that we don't find anything like that, we ask the question, how will be the signal if it comes from any astrophysical object or any of the plausible astrophysical objects? And then the idea is that because these objects are pretty much generally distributed in the universe. They used to be pretty far away. The signal will be some homogeneous signal. In the sky map, it will be distributed like completely flat in the sky, right? Like something, this is the sky map, and it will be everything. I mean, normalized flux everywhere. And the other thing, it was okay, maybe they come from some dark matter decay or something related with the dark matter at some point. That will give basically a distribution that looks more or less like this. I have it somewhere here. That, if you take any model for dark matter and you plot what will be the distribution in the sky that you will see from that, it looks like this. You have an excess in the galactic center and then you have some flux that looks homogeneous. The question is that these events, they look at some point like that. I don't know, probably not. But if there's any astrophysical contribution of these events, and you see here in the galactic center we have pretty much few events, we have some kind of clustering. And then one of the possibilities is like, okay, we can ask the question of if we need some contribution coming from this flux in the signal. That was one of the things we tried to do. See if this is something like homogeneous plus some signal, or how would you can exclude the homogeneous distribution. And that's what we did. And in order to do that, I mean, I agree that maybe trying to explain this from dark matter is a bit tricky, but because it's a very heavy particle and everything. But once you don't find any other correlation, you can say, okay, let's try to play that game, right? And one of the things that discriminates between dark matter and any other thing is where these events come from. That is the first thing that we look at. And
what time is it? What is the lower plot? What is the lower plot?
Yeah, the lower plot is the flux, the reconstructed flux that they come from. Basically, you put a Gaussian function normalized in every one of the events with error. Mm-hmm. That's some kind of reconstructing in a smooth way where these events, where's the flux?
So the orange points are your track events that are exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the orange points, they are tracks, they are much more localized than the other escapes. Mm-hmm. And okay, in order to do that, we did a couple of statistical tests. One is to look how equal or not are these two guys, and one is called Kolmogorov-Smirnov test, and that basically consists in taking these two maps, right? You have, for example, let's call it the dark matter map, and this one is that's equal, finding one of the flux, the differential flux. And alpha right? This is what comes from the signal, and then you have some. This is the theory signal you expect, and then you have the other plot, which is this. Number of sum of the number of events. Basically, we took an option in every one of these, the localization of this event. This is the distance between the event, not the Okay, that's what we do. This one is the one down there, and this is the one on top. And this test, basically, this test is very well defined when in one dimension. In one dimension, you have two probability distributions. And basically, what you do is you compute the integrals between these two distributions. Then you do something like this. And you look for where you have the maximum difference between the integrated probability distributions. Right? This is some kind of distance between the two distributions, right? KS test. Then what we did here, because it's a two-dimensional, and that's something that is known forever. But in two dimensions, it's a bit arbitrary, because in one dimension it doesn't matter. The largest distance will not depend if you integrate from this side or from this side. In two dimensions, it depends on how you do the integrals.
So
it may depend.
What is the horizontal axis here?
What?
The horizontal axis is.
The horizontal is n probability distribution. Here is probability, or the density, and here is some value of x. I mean, this is general way of comparing two functions,
okay,
to probability distribution. Right? This is nothing related with that.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets related with that, it's a two-dimensional thing, then you have like alpha, for example, and delta, right? And then you have many possibilities of doing integrals here, but one we choose is like divided in four quadrants. And then what you do is you find the maximum difference between the integrals in all this plane and in all different ways of choosing the quadrants. Which is, I mean, it's fine. This is something pretty used in the literature to measure two-dimensional probability distributions. It's not as good as the one dimension, but it can be. Then that's one choice. And the question is something similar. You do the integral in two dimensions, and you look for the point that gives you the maximum difference, and that's what we call the test statistic, right? It's something.
Is equal to.
I mean, it's the maximum of every one of these quadrants. One integral. So the dark matter plus,
minus this from the data. Right?
That's what you do. And then you choose this value as the distance of these two distributions. And the next step, when you have the way of defining how different these two things are, is do what they call produce some random realizations of the null hypothesis to check how many times you get values of this characteristic. Right? And that's what we did. And for these things, we get almost not really significant result. But I mean, some signal is always preferred because there's this cluster in the galactic center. But the p-values are always around 20%. I mean, there's more. There's you always need some signal, but there's no statistical significance of excluding the null hypothesis at all. And you can see. We did a couple of different tests, and then we also proposed some kind of models, but I don't think I have time for that. Yeah, here we put some kind of models to fit the state there. We produce some results by ETHIA, and I think using the effective areas and all this stuff, and you can fit pretty much. The goodness of fit is pretty much okay with many different models, and you have a lot of freedom with that. But anyway, let me jump to another thing. Another topic. This is again the sky map. Here are the 37 events. The last dark matter started was with the data before, with the 28. But here is the sky map in the galactic coordinates. Here is the galactic center. Here is the horizon, the equator. And here we put some different lines where the absorption is more relevant for different energies. That's what we were telling before. These red points are the high energy ones, the most energetic events. The green ones are tracks, and the other ones are cascades. These three guys are also cascades. The size of these numbers means what's the energy also. And okay, the question, the next question we try to answer is, okay, let's look at the galactic center and see what happens with these events, right? See if these events are correlated with something happening in the galactic center. And why? Because the galactic center is close by, and then you don't have any redshift or anything to have in the ground for these nine correlations. And we have good measurements, we have satellites measuring the galactic center. And that's something that we were trying to look. Also, we have more events, and it seems, I'm sure you'll later upload, but it seems these events are like more clustered. But that's one of the questions to try to answer, right? What's the, I mean, these events come from the galactic center, and there's something, there's some transient phenomenon in the galactic center that can explain these events.
Well, I still say that it's not statistically significant that they come from the galactic center.
Yeah.
So how does it, I mean, although it looks like that, but given the uncertainties in the direction and so
yeah,
on,
maybe.
Probably not all of them are.
No, that's completely true. Yeah, I mean, for sure they are not all from there. I mean, you probably will have some, you have learned from everywhere, right?
But did you check it? Like, what the statistical significance actually is that they are from the galactic center in this model?
I mean, we just, no, we.
It's just because the light is.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Thank you. We didn't check how likely this is. I mean, we take events in the galactic center and we analyze if there's some correlation with something happening in the galactic center.
But
right.
They don't take into account the extra direction.
Okay. Another direction?
No, I mean the direction. To say they are all coming from the galactic center, when you fit the spectrum, right? In the spectrum, we're not taking into account the.
We don't. I mean, yeah, we don't fit the spectrum. I mean, we look for coincidences in time or something.
Yeah, you don't fit the direction.
No, we don't fit the direction.
Yeah,
that's important. Yeah, we don't fit the direction. We just choose a set of events. Yeah. All the A are less than 2 sigma. So I mean, it's not that they are far away. They can be. Of course, there are some that they won't be from there. But if you have time coincidence with some, right, maybe you don't get this confidence. That was the steps, right? And, okay, these are the bands, and here is the line we select the bands. And basically, we choose all these bands here. And we try to check with these tests. And what happens with that is that we found some satellite, Chandra, that measures one of the flares, which is like 2-3 hours from one of the events. That's the only thing. Then the next question that you can say, okay, how likely it is this thing to happen just by chance? And that's a bit tricky, right? Because I mean, what we did is something that I see people is doing within normal in other situations, but I mean, it's always a bit tricky because Chandra is not looking all the time there, and you have to. I mean, you may, if it's looking enough time there, then you can, this is something that you can remove, this effect is not important in the statistics, but if it's not, it can be important. And, okay, what we did with that thing, my time is over. But what we did is we choose, I think it's at some point. Yeah, here it is. What we need is that.
Why are you looking within 2 or 3 hours? It seems to be an awful lot of time.
Anyway, yeah. I mean, the
well,
question.
What are you imagining? The neutrinos are emitted after, or there is a delay, or.
That's a good point. No, I mean, that's the whole point, right? I mean, the question. This is very strange, right? I mean,
I don't think it can be. I don't know.
It comes later. What do you mean? After the.
Yeah, if it is after or before, what do you think that?
No, it's after, right? I mean, here is the flare, and the resistance event is after. This event.
So the photons would be released after the neutrinos.
No, the only possibility of something like that, I don't know.
3 hours.
The other possibility for something like that is that the flare is just ejecting something, and there's something targeting something else that produces neutrinos later.
But that's
not crazy. That's where the rest of charged cosmic rays come from.
Yeah.
Shocks that propagate a long distance and hit various things.
Yeah, depending on which kind of.
Yeah, the question I guess is about how likely it is the flux of the second hit be higher or for the order of the first. If you have a first flux of neutrinos, right? This is why I say it's a bit tricky.
3 hours is not some.
3 hours is one sample drawn from an unknown distribution. Like maybe there are other neutrinos that we don't. Maybe
no,
that.
No, but do you expect in any source to have 3 hours of delay?
No. This is
what I mean. I mean, I don't know. I haven't studied this thing.
No.
Do you expect?
I don't know the physical nature of this thing, right? Then the only my guess is it can be that the flare is showing you the acceleration mechanism, and then it targets something else, the power of the protons or cosmic rays, and they
which is a certain distance and
certain
it
distance.
To be at 3 hours.
That is completely arbitrary. I can put it 4 hours, or I will do the same.
They don't travel at light speed. They don't get tangible like that. They would have some kind of mechanism like diffusion of cosmic rays, so this would delay that.
And what about the direction of these two things?
What?
The direction
of what?
These two things.
This is in the galactic center, and this is close to the galactic. I mean, it's one of the events that we choose, right? It's not the closest one. It's somewhere here. If you look at the arrows, yes.
And the flare is from the galactic center.
Huh?
And the flare is from the galactic center.
The flare is from the galactic center.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you include this effect, it would be like 1 sigma something. Discrepancy in the direction. But one thing was solved in this place. But I agree with that. I mean, I agree this is strange, right? You see all the material. But if that happens, imagine that happens every time. I mean, with the new data or something, then you have to answer the question, right? Then you need to do theory, you need to do astrophysics or something, I don't know. But that's, some possible guess for this thing. Here is the plot of some events and also these Chandra measurements. And here is the coincidence that you cannot see, but here there's a flare. It's also the largest flare that Chandra measures in all this period. And, this is the thing. And then what we did, and it's super late, what we did is we put around every flare, we put some kind of signal function that is weighted with the intensity of the flare, and then we scramble randomly the neutrinos here and see how likely it is to have. How likely it is to have a coincidence like this, or a signal of this intensity. And we end up having a value of, here is the thing, 0.9%. This is exactly what we did. I mean, it's a small value, but and it can be biased because the fact that Chandra is not looking all the time, it can be, there are many things. I mean, physics is implausible, but it's, it's also likely to have these two things so close. This is the message of this number. Just by chance. Ah, okay. That's fine. And another thing we check, which is pretty much related with that. If you say, okay, the events in the galactic center, they come from the galactic center. And they come from transient phenomena in the galactic center, then you should see these events like in bunches of events, like it's like they come like 3 this week and 4 the next month. And here is a distribution of events that are events more or less along all this yellow band here. And the idea of why we choose all these events around here is because we want to plot something that tells how clustered they are in time, and depending on how far they are from the galactic center. And you don't want to see correlation between this guy and this guy. Of course, this band is pretty wide, but we have fewer events, then we cannot do it much better. And here are all these events, how far they are from the galactic center in that direction of the map. And you can see here the events that they obviously don't come from the galactic center because they're far away, they're pretty much randomly. These two guys, they look close. And when you get closer to the galactic center, it seems that they look more clustered, right? Visually. You can say, okay, here, clearly you can say 1, 2, 3, and 4 clusters, right? Then you can also compute some statistics for that and say, how likely it is that a random distribution of events will give clustering like that. And for that, we get, depending on the test we do, but we get something which is about 0.4-0.2% for these clusters. This is using some clustering algorithm, but these are the events that are clustered. This one, I mean, basically it's these clusters there. 2, 4, 5, 6. And for this we get clustering. I'm sorry, this is the big one. And then, I mean, it's not really small value, but it tells a little bit this fact, right? That they seem that cluster at some point. Then I don't know if that some of these events become from the galactic center or not, but if there's some activity in the galactic center that gets more intense in these regions, it's something that that can be interesting. Of course, it's also likely that all these events that come from the galactic center having events everywhere, and this should be some events that they look from the galactic center that come from somewhere else. And that's that cannot be true, but maybe it's somewhere, I don't know. Nobody knows that. But okay, that's I think that's the thing I want to say about this thing. The question is that we don't have any idea about where these events come from. When we look at the sky maps, we don't know. When we look at any catalog, anything, we don't have any correlation. And then exploring possibilities is interesting. I mean, the dark matter is one, and it has a characteristic at signal. It has an excelling center, and especially from the spatial distribution. From the spectra is a bit more tricky, because in astrophysics you always have this kind of cutoff. You can have cutoffs too, and you can have different behaviors easily. And from the galactic center, I think there are some interesting things, some interesting coincidences that new data will tell more about that. Maybe from theory they can be explored, I don't know. It's an open question. But that's more or less. Oh, I don't know if you have questions.
So we've got lots of questions. Are there any more right now?